hello again, everyone. Welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for the 21st of November, 2019. It's a Thursday, which means tomorrow's Friday and the weekend, and then like a three-day work week for everybody is just around the corner. I love the build-up to these long, long weekend weeks because the week before it leads up to it. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, pressing play, downloading, spreading the word, the rating and reviewing on iTunes and all that good stuff. You guys write the nicest things in your reviews. Now, granted, I've solicited them and asked you, and it's a self-selecting group, but still, I appreciate the hell out of it, and I read every single one of them because I'm an insecure narcissist or something like that. I don't know. It's just, you know, it's weird because you're sitting here in your basement, you're doing a podcast, you're doing a radio show in a studio. You don't get a lot of direct feedback. I'm not one to take a lot of phone calls. It's just, it's my mouth doesn't let me. My motor mouth doesn't let me. And so the feedback I get in writing really is kind of cool. Somebody called me an energetic commentator. Better than Rush. It's great. And they don't know how I do it. I do it by taking a lot of drugs. How do I have so much energy? It's drugs. It's drugs, not really. Although it is nicotine gum. So maybe there's an answer in that. Oh, got an action-packed show. I've kind of had it with impeachment hearings. Are we allowed to say that? It's exhausting. It's so long and nothing comes out of it. Both sides are making clowns of themselves at various points. It's just enough already. I think that the American people have kind of moved on. And I think it would be better for Congress if they did. And I think it would be better for Democrats if they did, which means they won't because they're insane. I'll get into all of that. Plus, let me just start off by saying congratulations to Joe Biden. You're a new grandpa. You're a new grandpa, Joe. Hunter Biden. Yes, the lovely Hunter Biden, who left his wife for his sister-in-law and then cheated on his sister-in-law with a random chick in Arkansas, at least one. There are a couple of others claiming that he's the baby daddy, too. And then married a woman a week after meeting her. It's a banner year for the Biden family. Well, Hunter had a kid with the woman he left his sister-in-law for. Can you follow that? Sounds like a really bad soap opera, but no, it's Joe Biden's life. We'll get into that. Plus, I watched the Democratic debate, so you didn't have to. I think most people probably forgot that the damn thing was even on, considering that impeachment went all day and nothing really, well, Sondland. I don't know. I have some choice words to say about Ambassador Sondland. I don't know how anybody with so little spine can get a job. It's sad. We'll get into all that and more. Like I said, lots of audio on the program from the debate today to illustrate the insanity of the left. As, oh yes, you have until 10 p.m. this evening, Thursday, to the 21st of November, 2019, just in case somebody years from now listens to this episode and goes, I can get in. No, you can't. You have until 10 p.m. to enter to win a signed copy of Jerome Hudson's 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know. So make sure you email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com to get your name in the hat or in the randomizer generator, however you want to look at it. On the interwebs. Good luck to you. I'll announce the winners tomorrow's show when I play the interview with Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. Good interview about his book. And then we'll have copies of his book to give away, but it won't be next week because next week is Thanksgiving, and Thursday and Friday will be best of interviews because, well, I'm taking them off. You know, it's been a while since I've had a day off, and I'm going to take a four-day weekend. Got family coming in. The wife's family comes in this Friday and leaves next Friday, and my family comes in on Thursday. So I'm going to be cooking for like 12 people. Count the cats, 15 people. It'll just be a mess. It's going to be interesting to see if I blow it or not. But hey, what are you going to do? Anyway, you don't need to know any of that. You don't need to know anything except about the news, and you need to know about ancient life CBDoil.com. CBD oil. Look, I get it. And you're going to be tempted to fast forward past this. Oh, geez, it's just the ad. Let's just skip past it. Well, no, they're very important because A, it helps support the show. And B, it's really an honestly an amazing thing. I would not have believed it. I was skeptical. They sent me the thing and they said, would you be interested in doing the CBD oil thing for a sponsor? And I said, well, I don't know. That's kind of like snake oil, isn't it? I don't really know. And they said, well, try it. So they sent me a bottle of it. And I tried it. And it made a huge difference. I was shocked. I was a skeptic. Like, you wouldn't believe I'm a skeptic about everything. You tell me what time it is, and I want to verify it. You ask, tell me how I'm doing, and I want to verify it. So I checked it out. I tried it. I put the drops under my tongue, and it was amazing. It was almost immediate, the reaction, my eye strain. After a long day of working on a computer, writing and researching and whatever, it relieved all of that stress. It didn't give me a high. CBD oil from Ancient Life Oil isn't going to get you high. There's not THC in it that you would ever be able to detect. And they removed as much as possible. It's all organic, 100% CBD oil. I use the chocolate mint flavor. It's great. It works just once a day. You put a little under your tongue and the aches and pains and whatever, they just go away. They have a topical. If you're saying, I don't want to put that stuff in my body, I don't know what it does, try the topical cream. Put the topical cream on some achy joints and see how that works. And you say, well, wait a second, if that works that good on the outside, what's it going to do on the inside? And then you'll be hooked. All you got to do is go to ancientlifeoil.com. ancientlifeoil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get 10% off your offer. You're saving money. You're giving it a shot. And you will be a believer. Go from skeptic to believer like I did. ancientlifeoil.com. Plus, you support the program. And I appreciate the hell out of it. And I know that they do as well. And it's all the rage. People aren't crazy. People aren't crazy. They'll go for a fad and then they'll move on. But they're sticking with this one because it works. We stick with the things that work. ancientlifeoil.com. Okay. After my radio show, which ends at noon, I flipped over to the impeachment hearings. Everybody was going nuts. Oh, my God. Can you believe it? Ambassador Gordon Sondland, he just laid the smackdown on Trump. He's turning on Trump. That was the narrative all day in the liberal media. It's over. It's over for Donald Trump. He's done. Sondland just said there was a definite, obvious quid pro quo. It is over. It is over. And then later on, Sondland contradicted himself and said that no quid pro quo. I don't have any proof of a quid pro quo. It was my spidey sense that was tingling on one thing, but not on the other. The point of it is, and I'm not going to play a lot of audio from Sondland. I'm going to play one clip from him because he was so damned wishy-washy. I would like to think, and I think that most Americans would like to think, most people would like to think that people in positions of authority, people in positions of importance are decisive people, are people with firm beliefs who stand up for what they believe, and that's why they're there. Why else would they be there? Well, I don't know why Sondland is the ambassador to the European Union. I have no idea what he brings to the table. I guess I kind of know. He donated $1 million to the president's inaugural committee. But ambassador to the European Union is kind of a ceremonial, glorified position. There are certain positions in government where I think they could probably be eliminated or handled by somebody else, but they're patronage jobs. People can donate their way into them. It's always been that way. And it's fine for the most part. Usually you've got like the ambassador to England. We're not really going to have any major conflicts with England, so we don't need a skilled diplomat over there. The ambassador to Canada. We're not really going to go to war with Canada anytime soon, although we should be at the ready. I mean, come on. The majority of their population is amassed along our border. Do you think that's coincidence? I don't think so. Keep an eye on those Canucks. But there are a lot of them, you know, that just seem like we have an ambassador there because we have to have an ambassador there. They don't do too much. They don't do a whole lot, actually. I would love to be ambassador to Ireland, to be perfectly honest with you. Get to live in Dublin and get to be over there for a while. I love Ireland. It would be great. I don't think we're risking going to war or even a trade war with Ireland anytime soon. So it would be a relatively low-stress job. There are a lot of those jobs in our government in the diplomatic corps, where the head of it is, they're the figurehead. They go to the balls. They get seen at the events they have to attend, but they can't do any damage. They can't really do much good. There's not a whole lot going on. I think that's how Sondland got there. It's not unique to Donald Trump. It is common amongst both parties, because who really wants to be ambassador to Finland? Let's be honest, ambassador, what are you going to do all day? Eat fish? Like, is that what you're doing? Is that your job, eating fish? You just want the prestige of being ambassador. And there are a lot of people who want to be called ambassador for the rest of their lives. That's fine. I don't care. You can't hurt the country. The job needs to be filled for some reason. So let's fill it with whoever. Sondland strikes me as that kind of guy. He doesn't really seem to... I don't know what he's doing. I honestly don't know what he's doing. He was all over the place in the parts that I saw. There was pressure. There was no pressure. It was Rudy's fault. It came from the president. Okay, well, I didn't hear that person say that. I didn't hear John Bolton say this, but I heard that John Bolton said this. He was wildly confusing in his testimony and seemed wildly confused, in over his head. He may well be a nice guy, and Demick, he owns apparently some hotels in the Pacific Northwest, and the left is now attacking his hotels with bad reviews online and protesting and sending threatening messages to his family because they're awful people. That's wrong. That's bad. They shouldn't do it. Hopefully they'll be prosecuted if they're actually making serious threats to the man's life and to his family. But it's typical for the left, especially in the Pacific Northwest. But this idea that he dropped bombshells, Rachel Maddow in the debate, considering the bombshell from Ambassador Sondland today, the bombshell was in his 45-minute opening statement. He says there was a quid pro quo when it came to the meeting in the White House between the Ukrainian president and President Trump. If there was no announcement of a corruption probe into the Bidens and Burisma in the 2016 election, there was going to be no White House meeting. And then later on, he contradicted himself in his testimony. Now, in his prepared remarks, he didn't. Why didn't he put that contradiction in his prepared remarks? He said that he couldn't fit it in there. Just could. 45 minutes, the guy spoke. 23 pages. You couldn't fit three sentences more into it. Like I said, he also contradicted himself in what he'd said in past testimony. It's just a clown show up there. Democrats, well, this is it. They're ignoring half of what he's saying and going, this is it. It's over. Donald Trump needs to be removed from the presidency. And the Republicans are going, not so fast. He's contradicting himself. Republicans at least have the argument that this guy is wildly inconsistent, so you can't really understand what in the hell he's saying. Democrats only hear what they want to hear and then run out to their friends in the press and declare it to be true, and it's the end of the story. Like I said, I found this thing exhausting to watch because Sondland is like a beat dog. Maybe he wasn't always this way. I mean, I don't think you can build a successful business with this kind of attitude. But he's certainly become this way. He's like a beat dog that just, it's cowering. Like, okay, well, whatever you're sort of angrily asking me about, I will acquiesce in the hopes that you'll stop angrily asking me about it. It's not leadership, it's not important, and it's not reliable, in my opinion, on either side of the aisle. If I were on a jury and this guy were the boss, I would have to just walk away and go, I can't take this person's testimony seriously. Anyway, I want to play one clip. It was my takeaway from Ambassador Sondland's testimony, And I think it's the central question, at least today. It seems to change every day as Democrats are continually resetting the bar as they keep stepping on rakes. It is the question of the impeachment hearings, whether or not the president was demanding a quid pro quo for the release of the military aid to Ukraine.
But I believe I just asked him an open-ended question, Mr. Chairman. What do you want from Ukraine? I keep hearing all these different ideas and theories and this and that. What do you want? And it was a very short, abrupt conversation. He was not in a good mood. And he just said, I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. Something to that effect.
That's it. There it is. There's the money shot or whatever that Democrats are ignoring and Republicans are wrapping themselves in. I want nothing from Ukraine. I want to just tell them to do the right thing. The guy's fighting corruption. Do the right damn thing. I had no idea before all of this that Ukraine was so pivotal and vital to U.S. national security. I don't understand why a country that can't support itself, that without U.S. military aid and financial aid would collapse and fall into the hands of Vladimir Putin. I didn't realize that this country was so crucial. Silly me. I looked at countries that do things for us. But who was it? I think it was Morrison yesterday testifying that it's very important because we're at war with Russia and we can help them fight Russia over there so we don't have to fight Russia over here. So we're down to the belief that if first Ukraine falls, then it's fighting Russia on the streets of the United States. Is anybody believing that? I'm not a fan of foreign aid, especially because a lot of these countries do nothing that we give money to, do nothing for us. A lot of them bitch about us. We send a lot of money south of the border, and they send a lot of people north of the border, for example. I wouldn't give those countries a dime. I wouldn't give them anything unless they stopped the flow of it and cooperated with the United States to lure people here illegally back home. That would be my way of handling it. I don't really. There are a few places where foreign aid is important. Very few places. And those places, I understand why it exists. The rest of it, I don't get. Europe is much closer to Ukraine than we are. If the Russians are set on this domino theory of wanting to take out all of the world, starting with Ukraine, then in theory, Europe should be much more interested in stopping them in Ukraine than we are. We can help, sure, but if the rest of Europe, which has a lot of money, isn't willing to do it, why the hell do we have to, essentially, on their behalf? Quinn, can I help you? You want to say something?
Yeah.
You can't whisper and whisper. Say something. All right. If you're just going to come over and be shy, go back to your thing. You should be sleeping. Yes. Chew on gecko. Not a real gecko. The PJ Masks gecko. But that's my belief in this. If you're really worried, if there's a serious threat to Europe and to the world, then the people closest to it should be the ones who are most interested in stopping it, in preventing it. Germany has a gigantic economy. Germany isn't all that interested in what's going on in Ukraine. Now, a lot of that has to do with Europeans' indifference towards what happens in Ukraine. Has to do with, well, they're Eastern European and we're Western European. They're kind of backwards and Slavic and we're not, so we don't really care. But a lot of it has to do with the history of corruption in Ukraine. I don't blame some of these countries for going, why would we give them money? They have a long history of squandering money. Why would we help them out? They are very corrupt. And that's what Zelensky is up against. So if President Trump wants to delay some aid to make sure that that corruption is being handled, more power to him. The congressional money that was allocated, that's the one thing you hear all the time, is, well, the Congress allocated this money. The president has no right to stop it, to delay it. The money had to be disbursed by September 30th, the end of the fiscal year. It was disbursed on September 11th, which is before September 30th. So problem solved. It was not delayed in any illegal fashion because it would be illegal technically or against the will of Congress, the allocation of Congress, had it gone on past the 30th, the end of the fiscal year. It did not. Done and done. Even, and if I'm being completely honest, even if everything Democrats are saying is true, even if every one of their wet dream fantasies about Donald Trump and this giant conspiracy were true, I just don't care. At this point, I just don't care. It's not earth-shattering. It's not sicking the IRS on your political opponents. It's boring. It is administrative crap. It's garbage. So I'm not really sure how it's playing in the rest of the country. I suspect the rest of the country is not paying any attention either. The ratings for yesterday, the day before yesterday's hearings, the big Volcker hearing when they thought they had another bombshell and they really wanted people to watch, they were down over 2 million from the first hearing. These hearings are becoming less and less popular because they're becoming more and more monotonous. The American people, if something is important, get to the point. But if you're dealing with technicalities and people's intuitions and spidey senses tingling and you want to remove the president of the United States over that, the American people aren't going for it. And they aren't going to go for it. I think that the Democrats are kind of up the creek at this point, to be perfectly honest with you. They've screwed themselves into a corner. They can't stop now because stopping now would make them look really awful. And it would tick off their base. They would lose their lunatic fringe. But the further they keep going, the more people they're turning off. The more people in the middle are looking at this and going, what are you people doing? It's a catch-22 politically. It's, I think, at least as of now, a disaster for Democrats. Speaking of disasters for Democrats, they debated last night on MSNBC. It was a joint sponsored event by MSNBC and the Washington Post, even though three of the moderators were from MSNBC and the Washington Post only got one. And there was big news. They were very self-congratulatory because all four moderators were women. And oh, it was just historic. They couldn't stop patting themselves on the back. They probably need Tommy John surgery from hurting their shoulders and elbows, from patting themselves on the back, from having women out there asking questions. Well, the thing is, they have to be good questions. And they weren't good questions. They were actually pretty stupid questions. I want to have this montage. I'll probably break it up. I'll play just... we'll do the questions first. The answers were just as bad, but you can't really get good answers to questions when you're dealing with ridiculous questions. I'll stop it throughout as necessary. Here are some of the questions, the tough, the grilling, the serious debate that MSNBC, you know, Rachel Maddow was one of the moderators, and so was Andrea Mitchell, who has been at NBC News since the invention of television. You would think that those two award-winning journalists would ask serious questions. You would be wrong.
You have said already that you've seen enough to convict the president and remove him from office. You and four of your colleagues on this stage tonight, who are also U.S. senators, may soon have to take that vote. Will you try to convince your Republican colleagues in the Senate to vote the same way?
That was a serious question posed to Elizabeth Warren by Rachel Maddow right at the very beginning of the debate. Will you, blah, 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 blah. There's no real question there. Will you try to convince Republicans to vote the same way? Will you try to get Republicans to try? What is she going to say? No, I'm not. I give up. We've already lost. Let's just move on. Of course she's going to answer, I will try. They seem to think that there is I mean, this is just an indication of the literal bubble in which these Democrats live. And I'm not talking about the Democrats on stage. I'm talking about the Democratic moderators. Rachel Maddow, that's your first question. You could ask about anything. Anything under the sun, even, you know, just something relatively important to the Democratic voting base, which she is a proud member. She could have asked about economics. She could have asked about security. She could have asked about illegal immigration, health care, whatever. Will you try to convince other Republicans, as if that's the deal breaker? The Republicans in the Senate are sitting around going, until Elizabeth Warren personally comes to me and tries to get me to vote to convict the president of the United States, I'm not interested. I'm not going to even entertain the idea. I mean, what kind of question is that? Rachel Maddow is supposed to be this incredibly smart person, but if you actually watch her show, it's an hour-long monologue constructed with half talking points and half quotes and half truths. She's a master manipulator. She's Goebbels with a better haircut and no limp. That's essentially what she is. And things like this expose her because she's, you know, she was a Rhodes Scholar. Well, the first way to go about becoming a Rhodes Scholar, they don't come out looking for you. They don't tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, wait a second, we want you. The way to become a Rhodes Scholar, first and foremost, is you have to apply for it. So applying for it is half the battle. And given how many people of average or below average intelligence have been Rhodes Scholars, I would say that that is not an indication of intelligence, aside from the intelligence to know that it exists and be able to figure out how to go about applying for it, because she is not an impressive person in any stretch of the imagination. But there's one question. It's just, you know, this serious debate that they had over at MSNBC.
Would you support a potential criminal investigation into President Trump after he leaves office, even if you thought it might further inflame the country's division?
Again, these are Democrats running for the Democratic nomination, and this is what Rachel Maddow chooses to ask. Will you go after this guy? I need to know, will you go after this SOB long? Who's kept up at night at the prospect of this, that the next president might not launch yet another investigation into Donald Trump? Is there anything, any aspect of Donald Trump's life at this point that isn't under thorough investigation? Every piece of paper he's ever touched, including paper or toilet paper, is currently under some kind of subpoena. You've got Democrats on the Hill, you've got Democrats in New York, you've got Democrats everywhere thoroughly investigating this guy, yet they've come up with nothing except wild allegations. And here's Rachel Maddow going, well, once it's over, whether it's in 2020 or 2024, if you're the president next, will you please go after this guy? Will you please go after him? Because I don't think that we've overturned every single stone. This is it's an indication of how pathetic Democrats have become, actually.
How central should the president's conduct uncovered by the impeachment inquiry be to a Democratic nominee's campaign? You've said that you support the impeachment inquiry, but you want to wait for a Senate trial to hear the evidence and make a decision about convicting the president. After the bombshell testimony of Ambassador Sondland today, has that view changed for you?
Just a few more examples of the hard-hitting, very serious questions that are burning up. I don't even think Democrats give a damn about this stuff, to be perfectly honest with you. Rachel Maddow is a conspiracy theorist. She really is. Her show is all about conspiracy theories. She was convinced that she swore to her audience, and her audience suffered for a while, that Donald Trump was a Russian puppet, Robert Mueller was going to have the goods, and he was going to be exposed and removed because of it. And he wasn't, because none of it was true. Now they've sort of drifted back with another lure of impeachment, the little trail of breadcrumbs or cookies or whatever that attracts these leftists going, okay, I'll give you another chance, Rachel. And her ratings are back up. And it's all because of another lie. And she knows this, but she's got to keep them. And in order to keep them, telling them the truth isn't going to keep them. she's got to lie too. So this is the type of questions that she has to ask to keep her brand on point. But it wasn't just Rachel Maddow asking questions. It was Andrea Mitchell, who has been at NBC News forever and a day, or at least in the news business forever and a day. She is always billed as a very serious news person. She's not. She is a good talking points reader from the teleprompter. Here's more of the questions from the debate.
You have said, quote, "I will never allow us to get so wrapped up in the fighting that we start to think fighting is the point. The Republican Party never stopped fighting President Obama in his 8 years in office. So what would you do that President Obama didn't do to change that?"
Serious newswoman Andrea Mitchell. She is 322 years old, but she doesn't look a day over 250, especially in high def. Yikes. But that's a serious question from her. How would you? Republicans suck, and they refused to bow to the whims of Barack Obama. So why would they bow to your whims? That's a serious question from a serious journalist, with every use of the word serious in air quotes, because she's neither. Yet this is what passes for journalism over at MSNBC. Republicans did nothing but oppose. Did Barack Obama try to work with Republicans? I seem to recall Barack Obama saying, "I won, you lost, get over it." And him demanding certain things, him and Democrats cutting Republicans completely out of health care, refusing to accept any of their amendments or even allow votes on their amendments. They blocked them out. They locked them out of the room when the bill was being written. But yes, those evil Republicans, they just refused to work with Barack Obama. Harry Reid changed the rules of the Senate to pass Obamacare over objections, over the will of the people, by the way. For all the talk of democracy, if you remember back to Scott Brown, remember Scott Brown? He was a senator from Massachusetts for about 2 years, Republican. He beat Martha Coakley, I think her name was, who was a perpetual Democratic candidate who kept losing everywhere. Scott Brown was elected after Ted Kennedy died. When Ted Kennedy was alive, barely, but alive, Democrats had 60 votes in the Senate, which means that meant that they could overcome a filibuster and they could ram through whatever they wanted. Ted Kennedy drops dead, hell gets a new resident, and there is a special election. The Obamacare debate was raging at the time, and Scott Brown ran on the promise that I will not vote for cloture on Obamacare. I can stop Obamacare. If you elect me, stop Obamacare. Now, liberal Massachusetts said no. Not going to do it. We're going to vote for, we don't want Obamacare. We're electing a Republican. That gave the Republicans 41 votes in the Senate and the ability to filibuster Obamacare. So what did the party that chants routinely that this is what democracy looks like do? They changed the rules. They rammed through Obamacare on reconciliation, which is a budgetary gimmick, in order to avoid the filibuster. It's amazing how they do that, and everybody forgets it. It was the least democratic thing ever. These are the rules. We're changing the rules because we want to ram through our agenda, and we don't really care. We're just going for it. And there is what's-her-face, Andrea Mitchell, saying Republicans refused to work with Democrats. The funny thing is, Democrats could have gotten a few Republican votes with, sadly, very few tweaks in Obamacare to the bill. They could have. They were unwilling to work with somebody as squishy as Susan Collins up in Maine. That's how extreme they were. They just said, this is it. Whether you like it or not, we're going forward and we're going to find a way to pass this thing. And they did. It's not decidedly not what democracy looks like, because the special election in Massachusetts in 2010 was explicitly for the purposes of stopping Obamacare. If Massachusetts says no and you're still going forward, you've got a problem. Scott Brown had 52% of the vote. Martha Coakley had 47% of the vote. That isn't really all that close. And it's really not close when you consider the fact that this was deep, deep blue Massachusetts. Back to the questions.
How central should the president's conduct uncovered by this impeachment inquiry be to any Democratic nominee's campaign for president?
But right now, Republicans in Congress, including some of whom you've worked with for decades, are demanding investigations not only of you, but also of your son. How would you get those same Republicans to work with you?
I love this question because that was the extent of Joe Biden's question about his son and the obvious minimum appearance of impropriety, appearance of a conflict of interest in his son in Ukraine. That was it. How would you, these Republicans, these meanie Republicans are calling for investigations into you and into your son. So how will you work with them? Wow, that's riveting journalism there, Andrea Mitchell. Congratulations. Here's another plaque with your name on it. Let us add it to your wall of accomplishment, your wall of awards. It's pathetic. It's really, truly, absolutely 100% pathetic. It's NBC News.
Christopher Wray recently told Congress, quote, "The majority of the domestic terrorism cases that we've investigated are motivated by white supremacist violence." Congresswoman Gabbard, to you, as president, would you direct the federal government to do something about this problem that it is not currently doing?
Governor John Bel Edwards in Louisiana is an anti-abortion governor who has signed abortion restrictions in Louisiana. Is there room for him in the Democratic Party with those politics?
I love that last question because the Democrats love to talk about how tolerant they are and how they're the big tent party. But when it comes to abortion, they demand absolute loyalty. And the governor of Louisiana does not play that game. He is pro-life, or as Democrats put it, because they control the language, he's anti-choice. He's anti-this. He's anti-woman. He's a misogynist. It's John Bel Edwards. The idea of someone who is not doctrinaire down the line, abortion is good and we should be handing them out to illegal aliens as they cross the southern border, is a shocking idea in the Democratic Party. That we shouldn't be doing that. So Elizabeth Warren, upon hearing that and knowing that, and because the entire party is abortions, you'd think they got a piece of the money that abortion brings in, considering how zealous they are. Well, actually, they kind of do. Planned Parenthood is planning on spending $500 million on the election, something like that, some ungodly sum of money. They're going to just back up money trucks, armored cars, and dump money out for whoever is the Democratic nominee. So in theory, they are pandering for money. But listen to the way that Elizabeth Warren talks about abortion in this question, and tell me, for whom is this a priority?
I believe that abortion rights are human rights. I believe that they are also economic rights. And protecting the right of a woman to be able to make decisions about her own body is fundamentally what we do and what we stand for as a Democratic Party. Understand this. When someone makes abortion illegal in America, rich women will still get abortions. It's just going to fall hard on poor women. It's going to fall hard on girls, women who don't even know that they're pregnant because they have been molested by an uncle. I want to be in America where everybody has a chance.
I want to be in America where everybody has a chance to have an abortion? Is that it? Everybody, come on, everybody. You're not a true American unless you've had an abortion. Get on the abortion train. Let's do this thing. That's your priority? Abortion rights are human rights? Really? Human rights? So a human right is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, those are intangible things that are very important. They're ideas. Now suddenly the left is adding, well, college is a human right. Housing is a human right. Food is a human right. Abortion is a human right. Well, if it's a human, and healthcare is a human right. If it's a human right to have an abortion, what business does anybody have charging for that service? What business? How can you charge somebody for a human right? You can't. But they don't think about it in those terms. They look at the government as the grantor of rights. The government decides what is and isn't a right. The Constitution guarantees the right of freedom of religion, and they don't like that one, so they just ignore that part of the First Amendment. The Second Amendment guarantees the right to keep and bear arms. They don't really don't like that one, so they ignore that one and seek to just get rid of it without actually trying to repeal it, because it would never get repealed. But abortion, that is an all-important human right. I don't even know how society survived without Roe v. Wade, and any restrictions on it are beyond the pale, outrageous, and people should take to the streets. Again, for whom is this a priority? I want an America where everybody can reach their full potential. I mean, not the baby. Screw them. They're out. But everybody else. This is, again, when you get to a general election, yeah, you can cite all the polls you want of people who think that Roe v. Wade is a good idea. There are very few people that are this zealous when it comes to abortion, because this isn't just, you know what, I don't want to make that call for somebody. This is straight up, I want to make this call for somebody, and I want to make everybody else pay for it. And I don't care what your religious objections are. I don't care what your moral objections are. I don't care what you think at all. This is how it is. It's a fundamental human right. You can't object to it, and any objection to it is akin to a hate crime. This is the Democrats. Again, this is who they've become. They have moved to the extreme. Oh, by the way, now I'll play this Michael Moore clip now because this is kind of funny. Michael Moore was on MSNBC because why wouldn't he be on MSNBC for debate reaction? There apparently are people out there who go, well, I can't make a decision about what I just witnessed on the debate stage until I hear from Jabba the Commie from Michigan. I must find out what Michael Moore thinks. And what Michael Moore thinks is insane. It shows how delusional the left is and how bubbled these people are. He believes that he is not only the center of the Democratic Party, but he is the center of America politically, not just gravitationally. Gravitationally, he's got a good argument. But politically, I think his argument is insane. But on MSNBC, there's nobody there to challenge him on it because, well, they're all in agreement. Or maybe they're afraid he'll eat him. I don't know. Maybe they're afraid he'll send Boba Fett after him.
Just in the same way, I think that we have to, when you guys were talking about how we have to be more moderate or move to the center, that's how we're going to win next year. See, to me, I think moving to the center, I am the center. I am the mainstream now of the Democratic Party. The majority of Americans agree with me and Bernie on all the issues, whether it's health care for all, whether it's climate change, minimum wage, mass incarceration, but down the whole list, the American people have moved left. So the center is now more of these sorts of things. This is what we believe.
America has moved center left. We're with you on immigration. Open the borders. Amnesty for all. Voting rights immediately. Let's get this thing going. Abortions for everybody. Abortions on demand. My favorite thing about the left and how they choose to construct their belief in reality, because their actual reality doesn't change. They just choose to believe it's different. Is that they're the party of, you get out of my bedroom, have no say over my life and the bedroom. They want to have an absolute say over everything else, every other aspect of your life, but not in the bedroom. In your bedroom, you do whatever you want. Oh, by the way, on the way out the door, leave your wallet on the dresser because I want you to pay for everything in here. But I want you to have no no say, no input, no nothing. Input might be the bad choice of words, but no say whatsoever of what goes on in this bedroom. Get out of here, you prude, you right winger, you nut job. Leave us alone. Stop oppressing me. By the way, on the way out the door, make sure you leave a big sweaty wad of cash on the dresser, because you have to pay for everything that goes on in here. That's the center of America, Michael Moore? I don't think that's the center of America. I don't want to believe that. I haven't seen the data to back that up. Let's move to some of the other candidates. Kamala Harris is watching a candidate just fade away. Kamala Harris. She, in her closing statement, so this was prepared. Her staff thought this was a good argument to make. Goes on to list fights that she said, we need a fighter to go up against Donald Trump. A fighter this, fighter that, fight. They're really big on fighting. Joe Biden was too. We'll get to that in a second. But it is telling about Kamala Harris that the fights in which she has engaged, in which she chose to highlight from her career, her long career in politics, she lost all of them. She lost every one of these things that she's about to list here. Listen.
We're in a fight. This is a fight for our rule of law, for our democracy, and for our system of justice. And it's a fight we need to win. And to fight this fight, I believe we have to have the ability to not only have a nominee who can go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump, and I have taken on Jeff Sessions, I have taken on Bill Barr, I have taken on Brett Kavanaugh. I know I have the ability to do that.
What, lose? Because Jeff Sessions, Bill Barr, and Brett Kavanaugh were all confirmed by the Senate. But damn, you were right there fighting right along with them. That's like the Buffalo Bills saying that the four consecutive Super Bowls that they lost prove that they are the best NFL franchise in history. It's that level of insanity. That, like, if that's the best you can come up with, if those are the best examples you can show that this is how you fight. You fight. I fight harder than anybody else to lose. I'm right up there, and I will not tolerate victory in any way, shape, or form. And you know what? I might vote for Kamala Harris. Because that's the kind of Democrat I want. I have a very concise history of losing. Well, good for you, Kamala. Good for you. Here's a lollipop. This next bit of audio is a little poor quality, but you can make it out. It's, again, Kamala Harris. This seems to be one of the parts that nobody clipped, and I'm not willing to go through all the hours of the debate to find a good quality version of it, but it's crazy. It is just crazy. Whatever you think of the other points that Kamala Harris is trying to make when it comes to prison and crime and law and justice or whatever, the throwing in of shoplifters for me, maybe it makes sense to you. And if it makes sense to you, email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com, and I would love to hear it. Maybe it'll make sense to you. And I would love to know how shoplifters as part of this makes any sense.
Yes, because here's the thing. For those working people who are working two and three jobs, if they don't pay that credit card by the end of the month, they get a penalty. For the people who don't pay their rent, they get evicted. For the people who shoplift, they go to jail. We need the same set of rules for everybody. And part of the reason I'm running for president is to say that we have to bring justice back to America for all people and not just for some.
Okay, yeah. What? What do shoplifters have to do with that? Anything? If you don't pay your credit card by the end of the month, you get hit with a penalty. Yes, that's the deal going in. That's why you shouldn't run up your credit cards. That's why you should use your credit cards in emergencies mostly, or to build up your credit by paying it off at the end of every month. If you don't pay your rent, you get evicted. Yes, that's part of the deal. Does she want to change that? Is it rent is for suckers? Rent is somehow racist. Is that what she's trying to say? But then the shoplifting thing comes out of nowhere. You're like, what in the hell are you talking? Shoplifting? Shoplifting? If you go shoplifting, you go to jail. Well, yes, because you're stealing. You know, that's kind of a bad thing, or at least it used to be. In my mind, it's a bad thing, and apparently not in Democratic circles. No, it's not. Now, I've been saving the best for last. I've been saving. I just, if you understand the shoplifter thing, I would love to hear from you. How shoplifter fits in with not paying your credit card bills, not paying your rent, and then shoplifting. I would love to hear theories about that, because that just doesn't make any damn sense to me. But I'm saving the best for last, the Joe Biden stuff, which we will get to as soon as I tell you about our other sponsor. Look, you're going to eat this weekend. You know you are. Why bother cooking? It's so inconvenient sometimes. I hate like cleaning the kitchen, doing all the dishes, and then going, oh, I've got to make dinner. Now I have to dirty dishes. That's where DoorDash comes in. Long day of work, tough day at school, still stuck in the office. Treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app. Just go to the App Store, download it, open it, choose what you want to eat. Your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities. So you might find a new favorite too. Try something new. Try something different with door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada. Order from your local go-tos to, or choose from a favorite national chain like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you. Don't mess up your kitchen. You got to cook a ton for Thanksgiving next week. Take care of your meals this weekend. I know I did it last Saturday. We ordered fajitas. Probably going to order something else this Saturday. Right now, listeners of this podcast get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code CALLER. It's just that simple. $5 off your first order when you download the app to your smartphone or tablet, and then enter the promo code CALLER into the DoorDash app. Don't forget, that's promo code CALLER for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Check it out. You'll thank me for it. It really is a nice service, because, you know, you're like, yeah, I got to go pick this up. I don't want to go pick this up. Wait, now it comes to you. Joe Biden might come to you, too. He might also be rooting through your garbage can and arguing with the tree on your front lawn. You never know, because he's kind of lost his mind. He did not have a very good debate. You almost feel bad for him. You know, I mean, yesterday he found out that Hunter Biden was indeed the father of the child of the woman in Arkansas that Hunter Biden had an affair with while he was dating his former sister-in-law, his brother's widow. He left his wife of many years for his sister-in-law and then cheated on her with at least one woman in Arkansas, got her pregnant, met somebody else, and a week later, he married this South African woman. Cocaine is a hell of a drug, like they say. It's just, oh man, this is Hunter Biden. Who wouldn't want to pay this guy $1 million to sit on the board of your company, huh? Who wouldn't want to spend up to $100,000 a month on this guy? Who wouldn't hire this guy as your lawyer? This stable. Well, the DNA test, it wasn't quite on Maury, although it was Maury-esque, was announced yesterday. And Hunter Biden is, in fact, the father. So congratulations to Hunter Biden on being a new father. And congratulations to Joe Biden on being another grandpa. He's a grandpa again. He just got a new grandchild yesterday, and he had to go on the debate stage and make a complete fool of himself. Listen to Joe Biden's answer when it comes to violence against women. I don't think Joe Biden is a woman beater by any stretch of the imagination, but dude, if you sit there and say that I wrote the Violence Against Women's Act, nobody's tougher on this issue than me ever anywhere, you should have better sense than to use the phraseology, especially in the woke Olympics that is the Democratic primary. You should have better sense than using language like this.
No man has a right to raise a hand to a woman in anger other than in self-defense, and that's rarely ever occurs. And so we have to just change the culture, period, and keep punching at it and punching at it and punching at it. It will be a big... No, I really mean it. It's a gigantic issue. And we have to make it clear from the top, from the president on down, that we will not tolerate it. We will not tolerate this culture.
Oh, Joe, you're like watching a Hall of Fame baseball player who should have retired three seasons ago. A career 300 hitter whose now career average has dropped below 300 because they hit 228 in their final season simply because they couldn't acknowledge to themselves that it was over. You can't hit a woman in anger ever. I mean, in self-defense, look, if a woman steps to you, you got to put her in her place. Am I right, fellas? But other than that, you can't do that, and it's just not something you should do. But you got to keep pounding at it and punching it and punching it and punching it. Like, really, Joe? Nothing. None of this is registering to you. None of this. Your ears, even if you're deaf, you can hear the sound of your own voice, or at least you should know the sounds you're making, yet this is what you chose to make sound-wise, Joe Biden. Honestly, this is he's the national frontrunner for the Democratic Party, ladies and gentlemen. Now, it's great because the video, if you get a chance to watch it, you just have the shot from NBC News, from MSNBC, and it's on Joe most of the time. But they do a wider shot of three people. You got Joe Biden, you got Bernie Sanders, and Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris kind of looks like she's about to burst out laughing. She also looks rather confused and a little stunned. Bernie Sanders looks like Bernie Sanders. He looks like one of the old Muppets in the balcony up there ready to yell down about how everything stinks. But Kamala Harris is sitting there because Bernie isn't that woke either. But Kamala is, or at least pretends to be. She recognizes it when she sees it, that this is going to be a landmine for somebody. This is not going to go over well long term for Joe. But to sit there and just listen to this guy, you never can hit a woman unless, you know, she gets lippy and she talks back to you. She's running late. She thinks that she deserves it. Like, what? Where are you coming? What century are you from, Joe? You bill yourself as having written the Violence Against Women Act, and here you are putting a caveat on men can't hit women. Men can't hit women except, or men can't hit women but, whatever comes next is not good. Now, if she's coming at you with a knife, oh, no holds barred. All bets are off. But that's not really what's coming across. That's not what people are thinking when they hear you, Joe. Doesn't matter what you meant. It's what they hear. And considering how many piles of steaming crap you've stepped in so far in just the last few months of this campaign, you would think he would be a little bit more in tune to being careful when it comes to this thing. Now, don't get me wrong. This is the Democrats' own making. This is the monster of their own making, this liberal mob that would get outraged by this stuff. So I don't have a lot of sympathy. I don't have any sympathy. I always like it when they're held to their own standards. But I'm always amazed that they don't understand their own standards or seemingly don't think their own standards apply to them. I can only imagine the commentary today, although God knows there's going to be enough to distract again, that it might not get that much attention. I just wonder if this is going to damage Joe long term or even short term, or if the party has reached the point that they're just like, well, that's just Joe being Joe, as they've done his entire career, and he'll get a pass on it. But just remember, you can't hit a woman unless she does something to deserve it, and then you got to keep punching and punching and punching at the issue of abuse of women. In another embarrassing moment, and this will have to be the last one, Joe Biden talks about how he's got this. He's Mr. Black People. He's Jerry Maguire. I'm Mr. Black People because of his association with Barack Obama. And he makes a little screw up here. Says that he's got the endorsement of the only black woman ever elected to the United States Senate. He's talking about Carol Moseley Braun of Illinois, who wasn't in there very long. But there just happens to be another black woman United States senator standing on the stage right next to him by the name of Kamala Harris. He then corrects himself, said, no, the first. I said the first. He didn't say the first. He said only. He might have meant the first. He probably meant the first. But when you're known as a gaffe machine who might not be all there upstairs, you can't afford to make screw-ups like this one.
I'm part of that Obama coalition. I come out of the black community in terms of my support. If you notice, I have more people supporting me in the black community that have announced for me because they know me. They know who I am. Three former chairs of the Black Caucus. The only African-American woman that ever been elected to the United States Senate. A whole range of people.
No,
my point
no, that's
is,
not true. The other
that's
one
not
is
true.
Here.
You didn't say the first, Joe. You said the only. You misspoke, and you would get a pass for it, except that you misspeak all the time and seem confused as to what you're doing anywhere, not just on the campaign trail or the debate stage. You almost feel sorry for him until you realize that he is part of the party that wants to destroy this country, and then you just sit back and laugh as they all just stew in their own feces. Well, that was the debate. That was the day in impeachment. That was the day in news. And what's funny is by tomorrow, this will mostly all be forgotten. We will have moved on. Thank God for that. Anyway, you can email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. You have until 10 o'clock tonight to enter to win Jerome Hudson's book. So get those entries in tomorrow on the program. A very long, very interesting discussion with Rich Lowry of National Review. Plus, we'll have about 10 minutes. I'll bring you up to date on anything that happens in the world other than that. And then we're on to the weekend and then Thanksgiving week, ready for a trip to Fancoma on Black Friday. We'll still have three new shows next week, and then we'll do best of interviews on Thursday and Friday, just in case you're driving over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house for Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening, telling a friend and all that stuff. I'll see you tomorrow.
No man has a right to raise a hand to a woman in anger other than in self-defense, and that's rarely ever occurs.